Welcome to Nexus 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. Since the inception of this podcast, we've interviewed the descendants of the storied 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-female African American battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. In episode 15, which originally aired on April the 5th of 2023, I interviewed the daughters of Lydia Esther Thornton Moore, who served in the 6888. My guests were Alva Moore Stevenson and Rosenda Moore. With great sadness, I must share that Alva passed in early February 2024. In honor of her life and legacy, I am herein rebroadcasting my interview with her and her sister from 2023. Alva Moore Stevenson was a retired program coordinator and interviewer in the UCLA Library Special Collections and Center for Oral History Research. Her 37-year career focused on collections and oral histories related to the history of African Americans in Los Angeles. In the course of decades of work in these fields, she also was closely involved with the Southwest Oral History Association and its annual events. In addition, her research interests were the history of Blacks in Mexico and the historical and genealogical connections between Afro-Mexicans and African-Americans. Since 2018, she had been a 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion advocate. Alva is remembered lovingly by her family, children, grandchildren, longtime friends, and generations of close colleagues from her work at UCLA, SOHAR, History and Genealogy Research, and her 6888 advocacy work in recent years. And now, here's the interview with Alva and Rosenda from April 2023. My guests tonight are Alva Stevenson and Rosenda Moore, daughters of Lydia Esther Thornton Moore. Welcome, Alva and Rosenda.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I always like to start with a couple of interesting facts. First, Lydia, if I may call it mom by her first name, Lydia was one of the only Afro-Mexican in the 6888. She was given a choice between joining the white or the African-American unit, and she chose the African-American unit. And we'll talk some more about that in a bit. And second, your uncle was a Buffalo soldier. So I think those are some pretty interesting things. Now, let's talk about Lydia. Let's go back to the beginning. She was born in Nogales, Arizona?
Yes.
And so how old was she at the time that she enlisted?
She was 19 years old. She graduated from high school. I do know she said that there weren't many jobs in Nogales. That was one of the reasons she enlisted, but the main reason was that our Uncle Daniel was bayoneted at the Battle of Bougainville in the Pacific during World War II. That was her main reason for enlisting.
So how did that influence her decision to enlist? Did she talk about that?
Well, I mean, it was out of honor, duty, love for a brother, and she felt she needed to do something. And that was her response, was to enlist.
So how did your parents react? How did her parents react when she told them she was going to enlist?
Well, you know, we don't know. She didn't speak on it. We'd only be speculating now. My mother's grandfather, the father of her father, was in the United States Colored Troops, 12th Heavy Artillery Regiment at Camp Nelson, Kentucky. So I would only be speculating on whether there was any, whether that influenced anything. I wouldn't know, and I wouldn't know Don't know what my grandparents thought about, her enlisting.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if there was any pushback, we don't know about it. Or if there was any encouragement, we don't know about it, since, as Alva said, our mother didn't speak on it. But if there was any pushback, obviously that didn't stop her. She went all the way to Phoenix and she enlisted.
Okay.
So that's something, because I don't think she had ever left Nogales at that point in her 19 years of life. So
I know.
that was a big leap of faith right there, and focused on what she felt she could do.
I know in my mother's case, her three brothers were already in the service. And so when she told her parents she was going to go enlist, they were not enthusiastic, but she promised them she would not go overseas. We know how that worked out. So,
Oh, goodness. That's
you indicated your mom, when she went to enlist, she was given a choice between the white, during the white unit or the African American unit. Tell me more about that.
Well, again, it's speculation as to why she was. It would be speculation as to why she was given that choice. She was fair skinned like me, and also native. She was a native Spanish speaker. She and her siblings all were, so she still had a heavy accent. So we don't really know why she was given the choice that, but that's just, speculation.
She didn't talk about it.
No, she
Really?
only stated that she was given the choice, and she
Okay.
decided, the African American battalion was the one she would join.
Okay.
Yeah, all we can do is guess at why. The only thing I could think of, which I mentioned to Alva, is, up to that point in her life, the people that she was closest with were her family. Her father's African American, her mother's Mexican, and other families that they knew. There were other Afro-Mexican families there, and I think there were at least a couple African-American families. That's who she knew the best, the closest. So I think as a young person, you're getting ready to enlist in the armed services and you're given that choice, like, well, I'm going to go in this direction because this is a community I know, I'm familiar with. That's the only thing I could think of. Yeah.
Makes sense. Makes sense. It was still a very courageous thing for a young Afro, a Mexican woman to enlist in the service in the 40s. That was a pretty, it was a difficult time. And, the notion of going maybe far away from home in harm's way.
Right.
What do you think made her so special?
Well, one thing I can say, and I think this is borne out over her entire life, is that she was somebody that liked to help others. Her mother, our grandmother, was the same way. We know that she helped a lot of families that came across the border, with various things they might need, like meals or something like that. Our grandmother helped a lot with her grandchildren. I mean, both our grandmother and grandfather did. So it's, I think that was an example, to my mother.
Okay.
So
I'm interested in any stories that she shared with you about her time in the service. Any adventures or painful, scary, or funny memories?
What she did share, on about after she enlisted, is that she did meet a few other, let's see, Afro-Latina, Puerto Rican, I believe somebody who had hailed from Jamaica, and
Oh,
that
yeah,
she
and
was
some that
really
are Dominican too.
right. And that she really loved having the camaraderie with them. I imagine, with the language, but she said that, of course, she didn't use the word mentor, but I know there was one woman she mentored that was a bit older than her who did help her and kind of fulfilled that mentoring role to her.
Okay. I'd like to hear more about what she did when she completed her service, her education, career, and community activism.
Okay.
Well, I know when I was in junior high school, she worked as a volunteer social worker here in the city of Culver City, where we were all living at the time. And her role in that was she was teaching English as a second language classes and also advising these young immigrant women. This is a good step for. For your future, to help you get your citizenship, you'll be able to get a better jobs, yourself and your spouse, better take care of your family here, your family back home. I do remember every once in a while, this was after Alva got married. I was at the grocery store with her and this happened several times. We would be at the produce section, and she'd end up in a conversation with, a younger Latina woman. And, she sometimes I would see her, she'd give her phone number, say, hey, and I would ask her, because I'm not fluent in Spanish, what they were talking about. And she'd say, oh, telling her she could sign up for these ESL classes and give her some good advice and help her, get her citizenship and, maybe her husband also. I do remember that went on for quite a while. And I found that interesting. It's like she saw the value in education and she was going to reach out to help others, in whatever way she could. And that was what she was doing at that point. And I know much later, by the time I was in high school and like first part of college, she actually started working for, you'll have to remind me, I think it was LA County. So they have schools that are for wards of the court. And she worked at one that wasn't far from my first job. And at a department store, there was a school in the area, and sometimes she did a lot of where she would tell me kind of the work she was doing, and this is to help children that are living at this facility for various reasons they've been placed there as wards of the court, and she would follow up with some of the families after the child had, reached the point that they'd wanted them to get to and were able to return home. But it was interesting. She would mention sometimes that some of these, sometimes their life story or whatever and what she was trying to help them with. And so yeah, that seems to be an ongoing thing. And then she went on to get her bilingual teaching credential. And when she graduated from that program, Alva graduated from UCLA and I graduated from high school and then she graduated. We actually have a picture of the three of us in our, captain gown. So that I was
Nice.
that was really something. But now I there's still things I want to learn and maybe make changes in my career. And I realize now that in the past few years, she was my age. Like when she did that, she was 58 years old. And I thought, well, goodness, if she launched in a new career and wanted to still learn, valuable knowledge and skills and, move on with her career, there's no excuse that I can't do the same.
Never too late.
Yeah. Our father used to tell us that a lot, Every chance he could, it's never too late to go back to college. You could still learn something. You should focus on what you want out of life.
Dad was right. So when she was she able to take advantage of the GI Bill when she came back?
She did, and we're really thankful that that was available to her and my dad, because one of our homes she got with her bill, and the other my dad got with his, plus, the educational benefits. So it's really, it's a wonderful thing. I guess I was a little shocked or not surprised when fairly recently that I learned that some did not get their GI benefits upon leaving the service, after World War II.
That's true. Apparently, I was surprised also because my mom used the GI Bill to get a home and to go to college. And
Yes.
so we just grew, I just grew assuming that that would have been the case, but
Exactly.
clearly I've learned differently. So, but it's
Yeah, I remember there's an old picture I saw among the family photos when Alva and I were going through them after our father passed away. And it's a picture of, I don't think I was born yet. There's Alva and she's very young, and our brother's there, our mother and father in there. And our mother had a cap and gown on, and when I'd asked Alva about that, she said, oh, that was when she got her first degree. I believe it was an AA degree, but I don't remember what her major was at that point. So she was doing that when, before I was even here, and Alva
Right.
was young,
Yeah, no, it she actually started going to LA City College. I think I wasn't even born yet, after she came here after World War II.
Yeah, because Daddy said that she was going to school there, and this was before they got married, right before they got married, and because he worked after he went to school, and he would come pick her up, and because it took him a long time to get across town, he didn't have a car yet on the bus, he asked our godfather, Gregory, who was, one of her close friends, if he would wait with her, because I guess the side of the school where the bus stop was, there weren't any street lights. And he was worried about her standing there in the dark. And he said he was forever thankful that he did that to protect, his future wife, But so she was going, yeah, she was going to school then. And he had taken some classes and had transferred elsewhere.
Okay. Do you recall any lessons that she learned in her during her time in the service that she passed on to the family? Any values, traditions that she passed on as a consequence of her service?
Well, she didn't specifically speak on it, and I guess what, I should also say is that she really did not speak on it until we were adults. We knew she served in World War II, but she never spoke on it. And until I was doing my master's thesis on my, mother's side of the family, and that's when we learned really the first details of her service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think she didn't talk about it?
I could not say for sure. Since she didn't speak on it, I don't know if there were any bad experiences. But I've since learned by, meeting other and reading about other women, during World War II, and just women and men, many of them served. They came back home, back to civilian life, continued with their lives, and didn't speak with their families about it.
Yeah, we've heard
And
that from quite a few, quite a few.
not uncommon.
Well, now that I'm interviewing descendants, I'm hearing that as well. Although that was, again, that was not the experience that we had because we had so many people in the military. Everybody talked about it. All six uncles, and mom. So we always just knew everybody was in, and dad. So.
Yeah, it's fortunate. Yes, because my husband's grandfather was a Buffalo soldier and four sons, my husband's four uncles, all served in the military. And I don't remember ever hearing anything in all my interactions over the years, and they're all gone now.
So interesting.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
I'm surprised that our mother and father didn't speak on their military service either, because I know our mother's younger brother went on to serve, our Uncle Billy served, and also one of our Aunt Laura's son, Tony. Oh, you remember Tony? Yeah, he served in the Navy. And then, going on forward, our on the other side of the family, our cousin Paul had served. His son and granddaughter ultimately, like later, served. And then our Aunt Honey's husband, he served in World War II. Alphonse, and I believe, and there's several of our cousins, since then. Our cousin Kathy, like one or two of her sons served.
A
There's a
long,
military
a long,
presence.
absolutely.
Yeah, but I guess that, that's a question we might not ever know the
No.
answer to, why they didn't speak. I think the one time I don't know that I really asked, but during the first 4 years of the 90s, I was married, and my former husband said, "Oh, it's Veterans Day. You're supposed to, if your parents served, one or both your parents served, you're supposed to call them and say thank you for your service." So, I don't think Oliver and I ever knew that or did that, growing up. So I picked up the phone and called, and mommy answered the phone, and I said, "Oh, Veterans Day, mommy, I called to thank you for your service." And she laughed. She laughed and said, "That was a long time ago." And then she calls to, calls to our dad, "Al, come here. The son is on the phone." I said the same thing to my father, "Thank you for your service, Daddy." And he says, and he laughed and said, "That was a long time ago." That was it. Nothing. I didn't say anything else, either of them. I just,
Interesting.
I think maybe, maybe those of their generation that served, they've moved on in their life. They got married, they raised a family, they had careers, they went back to school and furthered their careers, so much, they'd seen the birth of their kids and grandkids. I guess that, their focus moved forward with the rest of their life, and that's where their focus was,
Servicemen have different reactions to different wars. I mean, if we think about that, was the greatest generation. They're considered, it was a war when people were very patriotic and felt strongly about what they were doing it being the right thing, and it was your duty. And if it's your duty, what do? You go, you just do it. I think some of the, as we've known, some of the wars since that time, where people have not felt that same sense of patriotism. They've had a mixed greeting among the American public. So I think you're going to get very different reactions in terms of how people talk about their experiences. Just something that. So let's segue. I want to talk about you, your family, and your respective careers and educational backgrounds. We'll go, Alva. You're the older sister, so we'll start with you. So you have an extensive career in oral history research. Tell me about your education and your career.
Okay, well, I went to UCLA. My undergrad was in English. My graduate degree was African American studies with a concentration on Latin American studies. At the time I got my bachelor's, I wasn't ready to go to grad school, so I started working in the library in rare books, manuscripts, and in oral history And for the 25 years I was in oral history, we documented the history of the city of Los Angeles. But when I was hired, they had just started a series on documenting the history of the Black community in Los Angeles, which over I guess from 1984 till about 2018, and still to this day, they're still documenting. It's a huge collection. It's sort of a go-to institution for people researching that subject. And then when our grandmother passed in 91, I started looking into our genealogy. And frankly, it was really amazing what I was, able to find. I did have an advantage in that two of our aunts in particular, and our mother, did share the family history with us. So I had a good foundation to do the genealogy, and I thought, oh, well, I'll go back, for my master's degree and, do a thesis on, my mother's side of the family. And so after I got my master's, I started doing presentations on Afro-Mexican history, because something I learned, which I never knew when I was doing my research for my thesis, was about the whole history of Blacks, indigenous to Mexico. So since that time, it's been since 2000, I've been doing presentations to educate people on the Afro-Mexican history, but also it's evolved into a presentation where I speak on not just that history, but also, Afro-Mexicans who have migrated into the United States, but also African Americans like my grandfather, who migrated to Mexico. So I've connected all the dots, as it were, because it's all interconnected.
And the book is coming out when?
Oh, I haven't done a book yet. I have a great podcast. Senator now does the presentations with me, and there are a couple of libraries. We go out and do the presentations. We've done it on Zoom, to genealogical societies. So, we're hoping to get, now that it seems we're hopefully on the other side of the pandemic, we can get out and do more in person again.
So, in your family research, you mentioned that you've unearthed some interesting history. You're descended from a Negro Seminole Indian scout as well as a Civil War soldier who was court-martialed.
He and three other Black soldiers were court-martialed on alleged offenses upon a white officer. So what happened, he initially was sentenced to death by, what was it, musket? I don't know, something like that. But then that sentence was then commuted, and he was supposed to go to the military prison, which sits off of the, it's on the Dry Tortugas in Florida. But then, before that could happen, the war was over. And so he was dishonorably discharged. And, one of the many projects, and it's actually been suggested to me by a military historian to consider that maybe the charges were trumped up, the court martial was trumped up, but that certainly would take some research. So after the war, he migrated to Kerr County, Texas. That's Central West Texas,
Okay.
and became one of the first black landowners there.
He had quite a career there.
Yes, and so yeah, it's if I would if we look at our genealogy, it's migration story after migration story. Because so you know he migrated from Kentucky, to Kerr County, met our, great grandmother. She had been brought with her group mother from Florida, Tallahassee, and then our grandfather migrating to Mexico. Then he and my grandmother migrated back to Arizona, and then my mother out here. So just not unlike thousands upon thousands of black families.
So, Asunda, I understand you have a career a financial spe as a financial specialist.
Yeah, somewhat.
So,
I've been working. I am a accounting coordinator responsible for payables and receivables. So I'm, processing outgoing payments as well as recording all the income. And I work for the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles, the finance department. And yeah, I guess that is a very there's specific things accounting wise that nonprofits and specifically art museums have to keep track of that other private businesses don't. There's a lot of minutia involved because we get donations from small donations to very large ones from many different sources, private individuals, corporations. There's some government grants that we get. We even get a lot of funding, from overseas donors and other institutions. And they have a very involved education program, a lot of public programs, all different kind of exhibitions, and it's progressed over the decades. So they seem very involved now and getting more involved with local artists in addition to the international ones, and as well as having an educational like arts program. They have students that come through various grade levels, and they also have educators and artists that work with MoCA that go out to the schools, as well as do other community events and things like that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's never a dull moment there. It's always very interesting.
Now, where'd you go to college?
I went to first went to I did West LA College for the first couple of years. Then I transferred to Loyola Marymount University. So I was a business administration student, and I had a lot. Well, sometimes they would give you these elective courses like to round out your selection of classes. So it wasn't all business courses. I had an art for non-art majors class, which was really funny. You did something different every 2 weeks, like linoleum carving and finely detailed drawing of car engine. It was very interesting. And then they had philosophy classes. So I have to say there was a lot of interesting world history as well as like US history classes. So that was also a very interesting experience.
Okay. Is
And
there
then
another?
following that, I didn't go to grad school. I mean, I might still do that.
Never too
I've been
late.
thinking about that for like 10 years or so. But I did take a millinery class, hat making. And that's something I really want to get back to because that's kind of something on the side of and completely different from my career. But my teacher was actually the first and the last African American hat making teacher through the adult school system at the school district. So she kind of gave me a good foundation, and also two of her students followed up with me for the following 2 years. So, I'm busy with the full-time work, and I really would like to get back to that. It's a lot of fun, and Yeah, that's it. Oh, another thing I should mention, my sister and my nephew have told me many times that I have an encyclopedic knowledge of music. I mean, I love music, like so many different kinds of music. I even like reading about it and like the people that make the music and musicians and songwriters and, you know, especially from different cultural, ethnic communities. Like, I'm fascinated by that stuff. So who knows? If I go to grad school, it would be great for it to be in that vein. And also like cultural history, obviously, I'm very like fascinated by that. Even before our work with as being advocates for getting the word out about the 6888 and, you know, our mother's involvement. That's a great love and, you know, passion of mine also.
So I want to talk a little bit. Thank you for sharing your backgrounds. I want to talk a little bit about influence. I'm wondering how your mom's experiences in the 6888 influenced and shaped your respective lives and decisions.
Well, I think for me, as I look over, my choices, my education, and also my loves and, passions, like my mother, I would say helping others, and also, our parents and other relatives have really instilled a love for history, and knowing your family history. And I would say those were the strong influences, and one of the things I miss, with both of them being gone, in particular my dad was an educator and community activist. And every time we would go visit in our adult lives, you were guaranteed to get a history lesson. Every time we visited, right, Rosenda?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, literally up through the end of his life, you know, he when he his health kind of took a turn the last 4 years, and so he asked me on my days off to, you know, drive him to errands and, you know, taking care of things, bring him over to see Alva and, you know, Alva and the grandkids and, you know, wherever else he needed to go. And every single time I was driving him to and fro, you know, from, you know, just our regular neighborhood or other parts of the city where he had to go, he always had a story going down the street. Like he would remember, like where I work in downtown LA, you know, he mentioned on certain streets, you know, oh, I had I had one of my first jobs was unloading box cars at Union Station, and in another part of downtown, he'd mentioned we were in the fashion near the garment district, and he said, "Oh, one of my other part-time jobs, you know, for 1 year was I worked for a dressmaker, and my job was to lay out the patterns and cut them out, and then when they were purchasing fabric, I had to walk down the street with these big, huge bolts of fabric and carry them." And then he had memories of, different parts of the city, like especially along Central Avenue. You know, they're famous for the music scene there and the nightclubs and restaurants and shops. You know, he would tell me what used to be on every single block. And there are all these details, and that's something our mother would do occasionally too. There was an event at UCLA while Alva was there. And it was about the culmination of the Central Avenue Jazz oral history project, interview project that had been completed. And they had photographs up of all the buildings and things on Central Avenue. And mommy and daddy came, and I was standing there with my niece, who was, she was probably, I don't know, 10 years old or something. And there were all these pictures, and every single one of them, our mother had something to say about. Well, that place had a really small dance floor. That one had really good chicken at the restaurant. This one had very bright lights. That one had all my favorite groups that played. And she, every single, it was probably about 40 different pictures, like every restaurant, every shop. And then at the end of them, I'm thinking to myself, goodness, how does she know all this? But I didn't say it, but my niece did. Her granddaughter said, Grandma, how come you know something about every place here? And then she just smiled and said, your grandma was young once too. So, but amazing the, our father was like famous for bringing up certain things. Just it's amazing, like the knowledge of and memory of all the de many decades here in LA. You know, I yeah, Alva, I think you're right. That probably has a lot to do with my love of history and your love of history.
Yes.
Listen to you reminds me of two stories actually. Once I went and counted. My father used to subscribe to over 100 either daily, weekly, or monthly publications, and he read them all. So
Are you too?
you know he had a few stories to tell. And
Yes.
the other comment about your mother and how she knew so much, as I'm discovering more things about the 6888, we're running into a lot of the pictures that were taken in the 40s when my mother was in Europe. And so my daughter was going through them. She says, Grandma rode a bike. You know, she's seeing on a bike and she's seeing her dress. She said, she says, I think of grandma as being grandma. She was old, you know. And so for them to go back and to go through to start to rummage through these photos, it's so enlightening, not only for my daughter, but for me as well. Because again, you know, you just don't just, you really don't think of your parents as being young like you were young once. No. So.
Yeah, well, we're fortunate, thanks to one of our late aunts, is that we have, I don't know, hundreds at least pictures of our mom and her siblings when they were young. We have, you know, our mom's baptismal photo from like 1924, photos of her when she was a teenager, you know. Yeah, so we're really, I think we're blessed to have, you know, those memories. And, you know, we can look back and share them with the next generations, you know.
Absolutely, that's so important. The younger generation always need to have a context. So how old was your mom when she passed?
89.
89. You know, okay. And she died, what year did she die?
2011.
Okay, she died the year after my mom. Okay. So it's a significant honor for your mom and, well, our moms to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. What was your reaction when you and your family found out about it?
It was tremendous because I think I remember the day that we learned. Well, I would say there was maybe 3 dates when the Congress finally passed it. You know, it was such a long haul to get to that point, and just the relief and to learn that it passed unanimously was tremendous. But the day that, you know, President Biden signed it, you know, it was just tremendous, you know, that they receive this recognition and being, if I'm correct, the only women's military unit
That's
to
correct.
receive that period is such an honor. And you know, for all this to happen, you know, what is it, almost 80 years later, you know.
How did the grandkids react?
Oh,
Or the kids, well, your kids.
well, I have six grandkids. My one granddaughter was really excited, and she's actually the one. I'll have to tell you a little story. So her in her history class at middle school, She came home and told me that the history teacher had shown the story on the 6888 that had been on CNN. And she was very excited, and she told her teacher that her great grandma served in the 6888. And then the next day, she took, I have a small photo book of
Okay.
photos that she was able to show her teacher. But I was so happy to learn that the history, this was part of what this history teacher was teaching. And, I'm hoping, that we can get that into the curriculums around the country.
I wouldn't count on it happening in Florida, but that's a different matter.
That's a different matter. We've got the other 40.
We could work on the other states, right?
We have the other states. Yeah.
Lucinda, did you have any? What was your reaction?
Oh, I was really excited. Actually, my sister emailed me and then texted me, that it had passed. As she said, that was a very long process to, get it through the Congress and the House and all of that. So I was very excited to hear about it. And Alvin and I talked like right after that, and said, Mommy and Daddy would have been like really, really proud of that. But Alva pointed it out. She says, Mommy probably would have just said, "What's all the fuss for?"
Yes.
But
Yes.
we're very proud on their behalf, and it's really exciting. It really, and when we were at the monument dedication, it seems like those events were like the beginning of that process. Something that happened that also like really touched me was, when they initially
This is
came back, there was no fanfare, no parade, no nothing. They went about the rest of their lives. There were some of the women that continued their career in the military, but there was no big fanfare or anything like that. So on the day of the monument dedication, after those events, the five of the women who are still alive that attended with their, kids and grandkids, they had us in a group of different cars. And so there are families that are living on the base, and there are kids there, different ages, little kids, teenagers. They were mostly teenagers. And I guess we were told they spent that week or the week before teaching these kids about the 6888 and the importance of the work they did. And so we drove from where the hotel we were all staying, through the town and then in front of the school. And there was just a sea of kids. And they had signs and they had the band playing and cheerleaders with their pom-poms. And it was cold outside too. They were out there. And that was the sweetest thing ever. That was really nice. It's like, I know it's 75 years late, but that was really nice that they saw the importance of honoring these women. And those kids were just full of energy. It was really sweet. And I see that was like the first step in the road to them finally getting the Congressional Gold Medal honor awarded to them.
So
So
it's like
that's really
it's the
great.
2018.
Yes.
So please share any reflections on what Lydia's life and legacy mean to you and your family.
Well, I think what her legacy of, not only her service in the 6888, but just a lifetime of service to others, whether that's her family, family, neighbors, the women that she mentored in the community, students she taught. And there were other things such as she was probably for a decade worked the polls there in Culver City, where my parents live. She also was part of the security team
during the 1984 Olympics for
Oh, yeah.
the boxing. It was at the boxing facility where they were training, and so she translated for the Spanish speaking boxers. So it
Great.
was a lot. It's just like I said, the legacy, you know, of service to others, I think is, you know, was so strong, and that's, you know, I try to keep that going, and also, you know, teach that my kids, my grandkids, you know.
I agree. I would echo the sentiment of my sister. And the only other thing I could add is I remember something she told me, our mother told me when I think I was in my early 20s. I'd started college and everything, but and I don't remember what led up to her telling me this, but she said, Rosenda, if you really care about somebody and want to help them, if you only have one piece of bread and that other person is with you, you'll give them half of your piece of bread. And that way you'll live through tomorrow and neither of you is going to starve.
Wise,
And
wise woman.
I guess she said that was her way, you know, always help in as best the way you can.
Great
Yeah.
legacy.
It's very true. Very true.
I just have a few more questions before we wrap up tonight. What do you think of your mom's decision to serve a country, given the level of racism in America at the time?
Well, I think that tells me even if she thought about the racism, and I should say, I think she did speak on it one time about her growing up, and that there was still racism, discrimination, but in, you know, this small sleepy town, it wasn't the same brand as in the South, but there were things that she interpreted as racism and discrimination, such as they wouldn't do your hair at the beauty parlor, you know, some people wouldn't hire you. They might even, I think, had those signs up about we reserve the right to not serve you and that sort of thing. But when it came down to it with her, you know, my uncle having been bayoneted, you know, and gravely injured, and that outweighed, you know, any reservations she might have had about enlisting.
Yeah, I agree. That was foremost in her heart, you know. Well, you know, my beloved brother, you know, is seriously injured serving this country. I want to do my part. Whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. And that's what she did. You know, she left the only town that she knew to enlist, and she did what was required of her, and she didn't waver in that. She saw it through,
So
as
she,
did
you
the
think
other
she,
854 women of the, you know, battalion.
so you think she'd make the same decision? Absolutely make the same decision again.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have one final question. What lessons from her life story can you share to inspire young African Americans, Mexican Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves?
I think to, you know, especially in these times, you know, with, you know, racism and discrimination, that really to persevere,
Right.
just to persevere, you know, take full advantage of the opportunities, particularly education. You know, there's so, when I look at the opportunities out there for young people and compare them to, say, our parents' generation, both my dad and my mother and some of their siblings on both sides were the first to go to college, first generation to go to college. And just I would say the young people's to have a single-minded purpose, to achieve. And we can look at, our mother's story and her life and that of so many others, as an example.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And everything I could probably add to that is, given our mother's example, regardless of the situation at the time, regarding segregation and racism and limited opportunities based on the fact that you're an African American or Mexican American. That did not deter her. She went for it anyway, to serve this country and do what she felt was right. And and going back to today, I mean, there definitely is racism out there. There are definitely people who will not give you the respect that you are due and represent, recognize your achievements and your intelligence and your character. But as evidenced by mother, we shouldn't let that stop us. Actually, that reminds me of something. She told me this once. There was some news story regarding, I think this was in the 80s. There was some legal case at some large company. One of the black employees had been there a long time, had been passed over for some higher level position and successfully legislated and did this investigation to prove that, there obviously was that in the hiring practices. This person was clearly far more qualified than the person that got the position, and they won the case. And my mother didn't say a whole lot about it, but she said, even though this is still the situation, even if you're not sure you're going to be treated fairly, you work hard anyway. You do your best no matter what. You keep going forward with that. You need to keep that, I don't know, keep that focus in life. And don't let anybody stand in your way that's trying to stand in your way.
That's a good lesson to end on. So, Alva and Lucinda, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I'm so grateful.
Thank you for this opportunity.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nexus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from an anonymous source. If you want something you've never had, you must do something you've never done. See you for our next show on Wednesday, April the 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, World Podcast Network, and Spotify for Podcasters.